Welcome, Weirdos! I'm Darren Marlar, and this is a bonus bite of Weird Dark News. Military news site Task and Purpose confirmed a disturbing fact. The newly created U.S. Space Force has no intention of fighting aliens. Despite the recent uptick of military UFO sightings, the Pentagon appears uninterested, at least officially, in the possibility of hostile aliens. But if an alien invasion does take place, which arm of the Pentagon would respond then? The answer? Probably all of them. During a recent Pentagon roundtable, Task and Purpose's Pentagon reporter Jeff Shogel asked if the Space Force is concerned about threats posed by extraterrestrial intelligence. The official answer he got back was no. Shogel's question was asked with tongue firmly planted in cheek, but the revelation last year that U.S. Navy fighter jets encountered alleged UFO craft in 2004 and again in 2015, in both instances appearing on radar and leaving behind video evidence, makes you wonder. If the unidentified flying objects described by Navy pilots, as well as military and civilian personnel for the past 70 years, are really of extraterrestrial origin and unfriendly, how would the Pentagon deal with them? If UFOs suddenly descend from the skies, toasting the Statue of Liberty, the Great Mall of America, and the Golden Gate Bridge with death rays, the Pentagon would need to convene some sort of study group to quickly determine what kind of threat it was dealing with. If that happens, forget the Air Force. Ironically, the service that would most likely take the lead is the U.S. Navy. Why the Navy? Aliens would likely come from vast distances, traveling light years in long-distance voyages to smash puny humans. The U.S. Navy is unique among the services in planning similar, though much, much shorter, voyages. Both submarines and UFOs deal with pressure. In the case of submarines, the pressure is on the outside, while in space the pressure is on the inside of the vehicle. From an operational and technical standpoint, aliens and sailors have a few things in common. There are other reasons the Navy might take the lead. 71% of the Earth's surface is covered by water, and if aliens operated from the water, remember, the 2004 sighting included reports of a 737-sized object on the surface of the ocean, the Navy is unique in having manned aircraft, surface ships, and submarines prowling above, on, and below the surface of the ocean. The Navy could also sail to the most remote locations in the world's oceans, establishing a military presence for weeks or months to investigate and monitor for enemy activity. The Air Force could operate against aliens, but the service's fighters and bombers could only remain on station for mere minutes or hours before returning to base. Against a terrestrial threat, this isn't really a big deal, but against an alien threat we know nothing about and, according to the 2004 incident, theoretically capable of traveling extraordinary distances in a blink of an eye, such a force will be less useful. If humans could lure aliens into a set-piece battle, the Air Force could bring a lot of firepower, but how one lures aliens into battle is anyone's guess. In the meantime, the Space Force, nestled under control of the Air Force, would contribute to the alien war by maintaining the U.S. military's network of position, navigation, and timing/GPS satellites, communication satellites, and other space-based assets. The Army would be the service responsible if aliens attempted a landing in the United States, or presumably one of our allies. The Army's 10 combat divisions would spring into action, attempting to destroy the aliens with firepower and maneuverability. It'd be in many ways similar to countering an airborne landing, with the Army attempting to destroy the aliens' landing zone and prevent the flow of alien reinforcements. The Marines could also get in on the alien fighting, particularly overseas in Asia, Europe, or even the Middle East, though one would like to think that the aliens would be smart enough to avoid that region and the prospect of their own 18-year war altogether. Of course, all of this is contingent on the U.S. military being on par with alien technology, which frankly is extremely unlikely. The universe is billions of years old, and other races could easily have had a head start of a million years or more on us. And certainly any species capable of interstellar flight is far more technologically advanced than we are. Consider that a handful of 21st century tanks could crush an army from the 11th century, or even the 19th century for that matter. Even a difference of 1,000 years would be ample enough to ensure humanity's defeat from even a minor alien expedition, hunting trip, bachelor party. If aliens do exist, ultimately it may not matter if they are hostile or not. Our destruction at their hands would be about as inevitable as destruction from an extinction-level meteor impact. They could even be friendly. The combination of advanced, destructive technology and violent tendencies leading to intelligent life self-screening itself from interstellar travel, that would be bad news for humanity. The UFOs people are seeing could even be top-secret U.S. government craft. The aliens could be us. In the end, maybe it doesn't matter if the Pentagon has a plan to fight aliens after all. Anna Marie Chaudhary was sentenced Wednesday in a West Virginia murder case involving her sister and her father, who married each other in 2019 following the sister's boyfriend's torture and death. Anna Chaudhary, 33, pleaded guilty to second-degree murder on January 28th in the February 2019 killing of John McGuire. Chaudhary was sentenced Wednesday to 40 years in prison. Chaudhary's sister, Armanda McClure, 31, and their biological father, Larry McClure, 55, previously pleaded guilty to killing McGuire. Larry McClure was sentenced to life in prison without mercy for first-degree murder. Amanda McClure got 40 years for second-degree murder. Amanda McClure and her father, Larry McClure, killed Amanda's boyfriend, John McGuire, by hitting him in the head, injecting him with methamphetamine, and strangling him. After they murdered the boyfriend, McClure and her biological father had sex and 4 weeks later married each other. McGuire's remains were discovered September 24, 2019, in a grave at a Skagusty residence in McDowell County. The Bluefield Daily Telegraph reported Amanda and Chaudhary were both estranged from their father, but they reportedly reconnected when he got out of prison after he served 17 years on, surprisingly, child molestation charges. Anna Chaudhary lived in North Carolina, while Amanda McClure lived in Indiana with her boyfriend John McGuire. Days before the murder, Larry McClure drove to Indiana with Anna Chaudhary to pick up Amanda and McGuire, who were dope sick. The group traveled back to Skagusty, West Virginia, where Larry McClure was staying after his release from prison. The group was reportedly heavily involved in drugs. After about 10 days, a plot was hatched by the father and daughters to murder McGuire, according to previous court testimony. During his sentencing hearing, Larry McClure testified McGuire was struck in the head with a wine bottle, tied up, injected with liquid methamphetamine, and then later strangled. A black garbage bag was wrapped around his head by Amanda, Larry McClure testified. Anna strangled him, I held him. McClure said the torture began Thursday, February 14, 2019, and lasted through Saturday. It was 2 to 3 days of hell, Larry McClure testified. Later that morning, we buried him in a 2-foot grave behind the house. McClure said they dug up McGuire's body about 6 days later, dismembering him and reburying him at a residence in McDowell County. Judge Ed Cornish said stakes of some kind were driven through his body. 3.5 weeks later, Larry and Amanda McClure traveled across the state line to neighboring Tazewell County, Virginia, where they married, the Bluefield Daily Telegraph reported. Anna Chaudhary testified that she went with them to Tazewell County, where she was told she needed to act like a happy witness. Amanda McClure is John's biological daughter, but she was raised by adoptive parents, the Telegraph reports. Anna Chaudhary was raised by adoptive parents in Minnesota. It was unclear if they were the same adoptive family. The truth may be out there, but don't expect the feds to share what they know anytime soon on the recent spate of UFO sightings. Some military and spy agencies are blocking or simply ignoring the effort to catalog what they have on unidentified aerial phenomenon, according to multiple current and former government officials. And as a result, the Biden administration will likely delay a much-anticipated public report to Congress. The Senate Intelligence Committee has asked the Director of National Intelligence to work with the Defense Department to provide a public accounting by June 25th on unexplained sightings of advanced aircraft and drones that have been reported by military personnel or captured by radar, satellites, and other surveillance systems. The request came after revelations in 2017 that the Pentagon was researching a series of unexplained intrusions into military airspace, including high-performance vehicles captured on video stalking Navy ships. But those advising the investigations are advocating for significantly more time and resources to retrieve information from agencies that in some cases have shown reluctance, if not outright resistance, to sharing classified information. And they worry that without high-level involvement, it'll be difficult to compel agencies to release what they have. Just getting access to the information because of all the different security bureaucracies, that's an ordeal in itself, said Christopher Mellon, a former Pentagon intelligence official who lobbied for the disclosure provision and is continuing to advise policymakers on the issue. For example, he asserts that a Pentagon task force established last August and led by the Navy has had few personnel or resources and only modest success acquiring reports, video, or other evidence gathered by military systems. The Pentagon Task Force is expected to be the primary military organization contributing to the wider government report. I know that the task force has been denied access to pertinent information by the Air Force, and they have been stiff-armed by them, Mellon said in an interview. That is disappointing, but not unexpected. The Air Force, which is historically most associated with UFOs from its investigations during the Cold War, deferred all questions on the subject to the Office of the Secretary of Defense, which has similarly said little publicly about the effort. To protect our people, maintain operational security, and safeguard intelligence methods, we do not publicly discuss the details of the UAP observations, the task force, or investigations, said Pentagon spokesperson Susan Goff, who declined to address the criticism. The report due to Congress will include a detailed analysis of unidentified phenomena data collected by a host of means, including imaging satellites, eavesdropping equipment, and human spies. It also must include a detailed analysis of data of the FBI, which was derived from investigations of intrusions of unidentified aerial phenomena data over restricted United States airspace. The report must contain a detailed description of an interagency process for ensuring timely data collection and centralized analysis of all unidentified aerial phenomena reporting for the federal government, regardless of which service or agency acquired the information. Gathering such information from across the national security bureaucracy is enormously challenging, Mellon said. They have to repeat that painful process with scores of different agencies, he said, citing the Army, CIA, National Reconnaissance Office, National Security Agency, Defense Intelligence Agency, and the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. A spokesperson for the Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines, told Politico the report to Congress is in the works but declined to offer further details. We're aware of the requirement and will respond accordingly. Any delay in delivering it is likely to be perceived by a large segment of the public as an attempt by the government to hide what it knows. But there is growing pressure from Congress for a more organized effort to compile what the government has learned and reveal how it is trying to solve the mysteries. Senator Marco Rubio, who was responsible for requesting the report, told Fox News this week that he does not believe military and intelligence agencies have come to any solid conclusions about the origins of the UFOs, but he insisted that the reports demand a more comprehensive intelligence gathering effort. We have to try to know what it is, the Florida Republican said. Maybe there's a logical explanation. Maybe it's foreign adversaries who made a technological leap. Rubio also held up the prospect that agencies will need more time to complete the report. I'm not sure they're going to come in on time, he said. I'm not sure by June 1st they've reached a hard conclusion about what they're dealing with, and there may be more questions or new questions than full answers. I can tell you, it is being taken more seriously now than it ever has been, he added. The pressure to disclose what the government is doing has only intensified after recent comments from the former top intelligence official. We have lots of reports about what we call unmanned aerial phenomenon, John Ratcliffe, who served as Director of National Intelligence under former President Donald Trump, said in an interview with Fox News last week. When we talk about sightings, we're talking about objects that have been seen by Navy or Air Force pilots or have been picked up by satellite imagery that, frankly, engage in actions that are difficult to explain. He cited movements that are hard to replicate that we don't have the technology for, or traveling at speeds that exceed the sound barrier without a sonic boom. One such recent case involving a swarm of unidentified drones that bedeviled a flotilla of Navy destroyers off the California coast in 2019 was revealed this week by the technology website The Drive. But there has been enormous resistance inside the bureaucracy to being forthcoming, said Lou Elizondo, who led research on UAPs in the Pentagon until 2017 and publicly resigned in frustration that the issue was not being treated seriously enough. You have all the stigma and the taboo that is associated with it, said Elizondo, who serves as an informal advisor to the military. Organizations whose mission this might fall squarely into are resisting adopting this mission. There's been so much public taboo about this for decades that no one wants to risk their professional careers and that of their bosses on a topic like this without being directed. He also sees what he called passive resistance, or they're just not going to do anything to support it, such as applying resources or personnel to the activity. Others see a lack of cooperation among different agencies and a desire to protect sensitive information that could benefit adversaries. One of the challenges that the Defense Department has had in the past is that a lot of these intelligence-gathering organizations, a lot of the military services organizations that gather data on intrusions, are all extremely stovepiped and federated, said Ellen Lord, who served as Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment until January and was briefed on the Pentagon efforts. She also said there may be valid reasons not to make it all public. "I think it is sometimes easy to go down a rabbit hole for the sci-fi alien piece of this," she said in an interview. "In reality, there's a lot of technology that has been leveraged by our adversaries, and we have ways to deal with that. But that is something that is not typically spoken about in public forums. Therein lies the challenge of some of these things." The secrecy surrounding the effort has been demonstrated by the Pentagon's refusal to even discuss any details of its UAP task force, not even how many personnel are assigned to it or what budget it has been given. Elizondo believes there is little chance such obstacles can be overcome by June under the current level of effort and is advocating for an interim report that requests more time and resources. "We can do this right, or we can do it right now," he said. "It's certainly not sufficient time to provide a comprehensive, government-wide report that Congress not only expects, but that Congress deserves, and frankly, so does the American people," he added. Mellon thinks it could take months or longer. "In addition to the onerous job of trying to get everybody to come clean," he said, "there'll be a sensitive and probably difficult process of getting all the players to agree on the language and approve it. That process alone could take weeks or months." Mellon also said the direct involvement of senior executive branch officials, including Haines and Deputy Defense Secretary Kathleen Hicks, is likely to prove necessary to compel the cooperation needed to do the job properly. The good news, he added, is the leadership on both sides appear to be taking the issue seriously and are acting in good faith. Nassim Haramein, a Swiss scientist globally known for his controversial theories, has put forward a theory that includes aliens, our sun, and interstellar travel. According to him, alien ships are using the sun as a portal, traveling to various places in the universe. Several videos of what appear to be alien ships heading towards and eventually into the sun have surfaced and gained notoriety. Based on this, Haramein concluded that the ships are using the sun as some sort of stargate or portal connecting our solar system with other points in our galaxy, or even beyond it. The researcher said that he believed the black spots visible on our sun's surface are actually black holes of various sizes. Under certain conditions, these black holes form vortices or wormholes. Once these intergalactic passageways open up, they can take weeks or even months to close. They are generated and sustained by the energy of the black holes, the Hawking radiation that emanates in the region of the event horizon. According to Haramein, every planet possesses such a black hole, and once a state of equilibrium is reached, the black holes become stable enough to travel through. In his opinion, any civilization sufficiently advanced to harness this power could theoretically explore the universe with minimum expenses. Even our planet possesses such a black hole, and it's located in its center. Since volcanoes spew out magma from our planet's molten mantle, they can be used to access the Earth's core. The black hole found at the core of our world is what gives it the energy life needs to flourish. Haramein believes this is the reason why so many UFOs were filmed diving down volcanoes. His theory is quite shocking and has not been proved, but it brings up one interesting point. As we remember, many ancient civilizations worshipped the sun and are believed to have been in contact with the sun gods. These civilizations have inscribed the walls of their temples with scenes showing the gods coming from or through the sun. Sun worship and solar deities were not uncommon in ancient times. This practice is called heliolatry. Many legends and beliefs are centered around this veneration. One of the most interesting variants was attributed to solar eclipses, with virtually all cultures believing the sun was being consumed by malevolent beings or evil gods. Ancient Egypt was home to the Neolithic concept of the solar boat, symbolized by the gods Ra and Horus. To the Egyptians, the sun was both a god and a vehicle. Sun deities capable of traveling between the stars exist in all mythologies. We have the god Sol or Sunna in Norse mythology. The Greeks worshipped Helios, and the Mesopotamian god Shamash played an important role during the Bronze Age. South American cultures developed a similar cult of the sun based on ritualistic sacrifice. When Indonesian police officer Abrim Asep went missing during the 2004 Boxing Day tsunami, his family naturally assumed that he had died along with the 230,000 other victims of that disaster. Asep had been on duty in Indonesia's westernmost province, Aceh, as part of BRIMOB, Indonesia's Mobile Brigade Corps, when a 9.1 magnitude earthquake struck off the coast of the island of Sumatra and sent 100-foot waves to strike the shorelines. Though many thousands were known to have died, Asep's body had never been found, and family members were left with no answers about what happened to him. While his mother remained convinced he was still alive, the rest of his extended family concluded that he must have died with so many thousands of others. Until, that is, when photos of Asep were recently shared on a family group chat on social media, apparently by chance. Recognizing his picture, family members contacted Aceh Regional Police, who then learned that he'd been in the Zainal Abidin Mental Hospital in Banda Aceh for the last 16 years. "I couldn't believe it," said one family member talking with the media. "17 years of no news, and we thought he'd passed away. We didn't know he was still alive." According to doctors at the hospital, Asep had been traumatized by his experiences during the tsunami and was subsequently placed in the hospital, though it remains a mystery why his family was never contacted. Even though he's experiencing mental illness due to the tsunami, his family's very grateful to have found him alive, said a spokesperson for the Aceh Regional Police. Despite his long hospital stay, he is reportedly in good health and has since been reunited with family members. News about Asep has left other families who lost relatives in the 2004 disaster wondering if more such cases will be found, though so far none have been reported. Cameras aimed at a Mexican volcano recorded very unusual UFOs that created something like a portal and flew right into the red-hot mouth of the volcano on March 20, 2021. Scientists admit they had never seen anything like this, and they can't explain what happened. Nevertheless, after the publication of the video, omniscient commentators appeared who began to promote the version that it was just a meteorite fall while completely ignoring the fact that what happened is completely inconsistent with how meteorites behave. Here is a new, similar phenomenon which was recorded by cameras just on March 29, 2021. We see a similar object that appeared from above and at high speed rushed directly to the center of the crater, but before diving into it, the UFO produced exactly the same portal effect as the previous object. If you'd like to see these videos, I'll place a link in the show notes. Similar objects with similar effects above the crater of the volcano were recorded by surveillance cameras on March 26, 2021. UFOs entering and leaving the crater of the active volcano are constantly recorded by surveillance cameras, but such portal effects began to be recorded only in March of 2021. It's no secret that becoming a world leader comes with its own set of perks. An entire entourage of advisors and bodyguards, a fancy car or two, or an entire fleet, your own private plane, and whatever else a prime minister or president needs to go about their job. Of course, perhaps the most noticeable change any newly elected world leader goes through is their place of residence. But for Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga, the official residence is one place he'd rather not live in. Known colloquially as the Sorikotai, the official residence at the Prime Minister of Japan has sat vacant for years, with multiple Japanese heads of state refusing to live there during their terms. One might wonder why this is. After all, it looks pretty fancy if you've seen photos. Constructed in 1929, the building was originally used as the Prime Minister's office, and has a 5,183-square-foot floor space big enough for any prime minister, but despite its age, the building has only been home to 7 leaders since its designation as the official residence. But like the prime ministers before him, Suga is facing a lot of criticism from the opposition for not making use of the residence, which costs Japanese taxpayers about $1.5 million U.S. dollars to maintain per year. One of the biggest concerns is the length of time it takes for Suga to reach the Prime Minister's office for important meetings and announcements. Yoshihiko Noda, Prime Minister from 2011 to 2012, questioned Suga's decision to stay in his cramped apartment, citing a recent magnitude 7.3 earthquake which struck northeastern Japan. It took Suga 20 minutes to reach the Prime Minister's office to chair an emergency meeting, when it could have happened in mere minutes if he'd been living at the official residence. "What would happen if there was an earthquake directly beneath Tokyo?" asked Noda. "The traffic would probably be impassable. It would take more than 20 minutes. But to walk from the Prime Minister's residence to the office would take 0 minutes." The land on which the residence stands was the site of numerous historical and bloody events. Back in 1932, 11 naval officers attempted to engage a military coup, shooting then-Prime Minister Tsuyoshi Inukai, who later died from gunshot wounds. This tragedy would come to be known as the May 15 incident. Just 4 years after Inukai's assassination, the brother-in-law of then-Prime Minister Kisuke Okada, along with 4 other men, were shot and killed in another attempted military coup, which came to be known as the February 26 incident. According to a report by Sora News 24, one can still find bullet holes in the official residence. Despite the horrifying past, experts believe the real reason Japan's leaders have refused to live in the official residence is more mundane. "It's simply too big," says Hiromi Murakami, political science professor at Temple University Tokyo. "I've heard vague stories of the place being haunted, but I really do not think that can be used to justify the Prime Minister not moving in," said Murakami. "But I've also heard that the residence is not a very comfortable place to be in. Japanese people are used to small and compact homes, so to suddenly be asked to move into a huge place like that would feel quite strange. That's probably a more likely reason than the reports of ghosts. If that's the case, then maybe the Prime Minister should, you know, just deal with it." A human skull was discovered by a pair of ghost-hunting YouTubers near an abandoned hotel in the United Kingdom, according to authorities. Danny and Felicity Duffy were filming just after midnight Monday near a former hotel in Bolton when they stumbled on the remains, according to the Daily Star. Footage showed they first noticed an army-style jacket on the ground before taking a closer look at an object next to it. "What the hell is that?" Danny could be heard exclaiming in the video, to which his wife responded, "Move away from that! Do you know what it looks like? Oh my God, it's got a jaw!" Danny then put on gloves and picked up the remains from the ground. "This is definitely no toy, this is real," he said. Police have since confirmed that the remains, in fact, belong to a real human. "This was a very surprising discovery made in the early hours of Monday morning, and we've been working ever since to establish the circumstances here," Detective Inspector Debbie Hurst, the Manchester Evening News, reported. "What we do know is that the item found has been confirmed to be a human skull, but it's still unknown how old the skull is and how long it had been at that location." Despite the few details known about the remains, Hurst said there is no perceived threat to the community. "By the very nature of this discovery, we do understand some concern in the community and, of course, the sheer intrigue that this investigation brings with it. However, we're confident there is no threat to the public and that it's not currently linked to any other ongoing investigations," she said. A TV producer has claimed that astronauts have been prevented from talking about UFO sightings by NASA. Kevin Burns, producer of History Channel's program Ancient Aliens, has insisted that spacewalkers fear talking about their extraterrestrial experiences as the agency frowns on it. Speaking to the Daily Star Online, he said, "We have interviewed NASA astronauts who are convinced that they have seen UFOs and who have confirmed with us that that information has been suppressed." The astronaut Edgar Mitchell was famous for believing in extraterrestrials based on his own personal observation. Buzz Aldrin also spoke about it. "There is a reluctance to confine a lot of this because of NASA being a government agency kind of frowns on it." Despite the show, Kevin also spoke of an incident where computer hacker Gary McKinnon claimed to have an image of a UFO from the NASA database before his machine was mysteriously shut down. A North Carolina man awaiting trial for allegedly murdering his wife with eye drops in 2018 was arrested last week, accused of starting a fire inside an airborne helicopter in 2019. Joshua Hunsucker was arrested and charged in December 2019 with first-degree murder in the death of his wife in 2018. Hunsucker was arrested again on Monday, March 29th in Mecklenburg County and charged with setting a fire inside a medical helicopter mid-flight. Hunsucker turned himself in at the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office. Hunsucker was working as a paramedic on an Atrium Health helicopter in November 2019. According to police reports, a syringe pump was set on fire, forcing the helicopter to land off of Independence Boulevard. A month later, Hunsucker was arrested and charged with first-degree murder in the death of his wife in 2018. Hunsucker is accused of putting lethal doses of eye drops in Stacy Robinson Hunsucker's drink. Hunsucker had his wife cremated right after her death, without an autopsy. Stacy Robinson Hunsucker suffered a health issue at her home September 23, 2018, according to prosecutor Jordan Green at the North Carolina Department of Insurance. She was hospitalized, where she was later pronounced dead by heart attack. A Department of Insurance agent and the medical investigator tested vials of her blood and found high levels of tetrahydrolazine, Green said, which is one of the active ingredients in a certain eye drop medication that you would use to clear your eyes. Hunsucker filed for the benefits of his wife's life insurance policy 2 days after her death. Hunsucker reportedly collected on a $250,000 life insurance policy on his wife. The couple had 2 children together. Hunsucker was charged with arson in Mecklenburg County. He was released on bond. Hunsucker is still waiting to go on trial in Gaston County for his wife's murder. A local resident was driving down the highway from Yuma to Fax, Arizona, and saw something incredible, reports latest UFO sightings.net. With the witness reported, "I saw 4 of them flying in a square formation toward Yuma. Couldn't pull my phone out fast enough for those, though, and the movement on those were crazy. Maybe next time I'm down there, I'll catch them on camera. In all my years here, I've never seen them have full-on lights beaming down. Maybe flashes of red and green here and there like a normal plane or jet, but I've never seen 4 of them flying in a square, solid white light the whole time. They all disappeared at the same time. The only thing that was letting me see them was the crazy amount of light they were emitting, so it just looked like someone just turned some lights off, LOL. Yuma Proving Grounds does military testing, but I've never seen stuff like this in all 23 years of living here. I wish I could have recorded the 4 flying in square formation, but I couldn't pull my phone out fast enough after I was done being in awe. I saw no smoke trails like in the video. I was literally trying to see where smoke would be if there were flares, but I couldn't see a single column of smoke. It was from my phone, Samsung S20. Would have been awesome if I had a Nikon. Right after the BP checkpoint leaving Yuma, they were by the mountains." And finally, the street scuffle for Kent Ryan Tomato ended with a knife in the chest, with which he walked for about 15 months. The 25-year-old boy was attacked by a gang of teenagers in the city of Kittopawan. He had no idea that a knife blade was stuck in his body. Kent was taken to the hospital, the wound was stitched up, and he was sent home. According to the doctor, the wound was not so deep. Only 15 months later, Kent got a job at a mine and underwent a medical examination. The doctors noticed something was wrong on the X-ray. The man, from time to time, felt a stabbing pain, but he could not even think that there was a knife in his chest. Most likely, during the incident, part of the blade broke off and remained in the soft tissues. Miraculously, the heart remained whole. Kent did not want to sue the unscrupulous doctor. He returned to him so he could pull out the foreign body and then stitched him back up. Thanks for listening. For more bonus bites, as well as other stories of the strange and paranormal, visit us online at WeirdDarkness.com. I'm Darren Marlar.